Hello?
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 You pod.
To win the game. That's the great thing about sports.
You pod to win the game.
All right, welcome into You Pod to Win the Game. I am Charles Robinson, senior NFL writer for Yahoo Sports. I'm here with Frank Schwab, senior writer for Yahoo Sports. Frank, finally, mercifully, we get an answer to the Jimmy Garoppolo situation. Jimmy G reworks his contract down to 1 year, becomes the highest paid backup quarterback potentially in the NFL. $6.5 million guaranteed. Looks like $9 to $10 million in incentives if he ultimately ends up being a starting quarterback in San Francisco. I know what Frank's initial thought was the second he heard this. I just want him to repeat it. Go ahead. What did they do here?
What? They just messed with Trey Lance, my guy. What are they? I know I've been on this Trey Lance bandwagon, but I don't know how it does you any good to have Jimmy Garoppolo over his shoulder as the highest paid backup potentially in league history or whatever it is. I don't know. I just think that for Trey Lance coming into his second year, and they kind of handed him the keys and they're like, well, he's the guy. I think that totally undermines it. I really do. I think that this, now Kyle Shanahan, he doesn't just have the itch anymore. It's like, okay, Trey Lance struggles. We're just going to go back to this guy who was what, 30 and 12 as a starter for that. Whatever his record is, it's pretty gaudy. I honestly don't like this as far as, and I get it. Like, you could make a counter argument of, well, hey, look, this is the most important position. Jimmy Garoppolo's won a lot of games. We don't know what Trey Lance is. He was up and down in the preseason. I get all that. But at the end of the day, I just wanted to see them really commit to Trey Lance and not have him look over his shoulder all the time. I just think this is bad for a young guy to have this constantly above his head of, hey, if I throw an interception here, Jimmy G's coming to the game.
It's hard for me to disagree that the guy remaining in the building is not a problem for Trey Lance. Like, to me, it has to be, because everyone knows, regardless what the money is, that's the funny thing. It's like, well, look at the money. The money sends the sign that Trey is the starter and Jimmy G's the best. And players don't give a shit about the money at that point. You know what they care about? They care about winning. Mm-hmm. So if there's a problem, if Trey Lance struggles, they're not going to look at Jimmy G and go, man, he's only making 6.5. We can't put that guy in. No, man, they're going to be like,
hey, remember the fourth quarter of the NFC Championship game when we were up 17-7? We know we could go pretty far with that guy.
For Trey Lance alone, it's problematic. For the franchise itself, I am wondering in my mind if you make that decision because you go, okay, we don't know with Trey Lance. Like, we don't. And yes, it's...
It has to be, right? Charles, that has to be part of the mindset.
I feel like that's
the message. That the message is, oh, no, he didn't blow up in a preseason like we thought. And he wasn't, training camp didn't go exactly as planned. We need Jimmy G back. It just sends the message of Trey ain't ready. But what if
that is an accurate message? What if Trey...
Could be. I don't know, but how do you know until you get in the games? I don't know. Let him play against the Bears week one. Let's see what happens. Let's let him.
But he will, Frank. I mean, they're going to sort this out.
You're inviting a contract. You are bringing it into your house. Trey Lance throws an interception, or makes a mistake, or you have a scoreless quarter, or anything like that. He's a young guy. He's what, 23 years old, whatever. Like, Jimmy G, we know who Jimmy G is. Jimmy G is middle-ish quarterback, right? Like, he's not great. They've won a ton of games with him, more because of the guys around him than Jimmy G. He's fine, but maybe Trey Lance maybe unlocks an opportunity to do something better. You traded the world to go get this guy at number three. Give him a chance to succeed. And I don't know necessarily that they are with this, but you're right. I guess if you're out of Trey Lance, I don't know. I'm just confused by this as all.
And this is Frank. He's the sharp, right? He should be the guy to tell you don't chase a bad bet. You know, you make a bad bet, it's awful, you lose money, you don't chase after it, right? You don't go, let me pour more into this and potentially lose even more. Now, look, I get it. I understand this idea of, like, bringing a problem into your house or keeping a problem into your house, especially, you know, it's weird because of the fact that, like, they kept him completely out of the picture. So
hey, welcome this new guy to practice, Jimmy Garoppolo, everybody.
Yeah, exactly. Stand up and sing. Tell us what your signing bonus was, right? Like,
yeah. I went to go to school.
But look, all that said, I don't know if I really want Trey Lance if he's going to fold just because they bring back.
Like, I hear listen, that. I don't like that line of thinking. I never have.
Bullshit. Man, he had to compete with Jimmy Garoppolo in 2021. You telling me now he can't compete with him again in 2022? Dude, grow a set. And I'm not, and by the way, I'm not saying that this is how Trey Lance feels at all. Like, right. I think it's us externally saying, well, that's going to screw with Trey Lance's head. Okay, fine. But maybe Trey Lance is sitting there right now going, psh, sweet. I don't care. I'm going to steamroll this dude. And that's awesome. Good. That's what I want.
I will say one thing, too, is just adding on to this, that I will say, like, if you're going to do this with a quarterback, Jimmy Garoppolo seems like a very good guy to do this with, because every report out of San Francisco, and you've probably heard this too a million times, Jimmy has handled this with absolute class. He's never tried to step on Trey Lance. So if you're going to have a, like, okay, we're going to just basically, hey, we got a quarterback controversy, everybody. At least it's Jimmy Garoppolo, where he's not going to make waves. I don't think he's there. People are going to talk about it. Fans are going to chant his name. If Trey Lance struggles, Kyle Shanahan's probably going to wake up every morning and wondering how he could bench Trey Lance. But at least Jimmy Garoppolo is not going to be one, you know, kind of screwing this thing up. He's just there and he's going to do his job. And if he gets called upon, they know what he can do in the offense.
It's not going to turn into Baker Garoppolo. He's not going to be, you know, worst case scenario is, yeah, I mean, it's more of a fan thing. It's more of a, you know, it's us as media, reporters and writers. It's media. Yeah, it's not. Yeah, I don't think there's
any Jimmy won't rock the boat. And that's a good thing. I will say that. That's a good thing about all this. But again, just from a team building, looking at the future, looking at everything, Jimmy is what he is. Maybe Trey Lance can be more. And I can't see how you could be totally worried about that right now. I
get it.
He didn't have the greatest preseason, but it wasn't so bad. You're like, oh my God, they're screwed.
Frank, you said it yourself though. 17-7 in the fourth quarter of a conference championship game. Like you said it yourself that maybe if you're sitting there and you're the brain trust and you go, okay, we know what we had with him last year, you know. We'll see health-wise what he can still do. Maybe he's never going to be able to play at that level ever again, you know, since the surgery. But what if you sit there and you look at Trey Lance and you go, we're definitely taking ourselves a couple steps back. We're definitely creating a problem for us with Trey Lance. Like they're never going to say that publicly. Mm-hmm. You know, as you said, the bet alone on him dictates that there's always going to be a sunny sky sort of look at him. But if you realistically, if it's just you and Lynch and you're in a room and you're sitting there and you're like, hey, it's just the two of us. No one's listening. let's just say it. Like we might be a 6 or 7 win team going through it with Trey this year. If you feel that way, though, I get the development idea of it. I totally do. But if you sit there and you go, we might be a 6 or 7 win team with this guy, and you know we might actually in this NFC with Tom Brady beaten up, and you know who knows if Matthew Stafford's elbow, maybe Matthew Stafford's elbow doesn't hold up this season. I mean, who know? You know, and oh by the way, maybe we get more out of what we've already had here. Maybe we're a Super Bowl team in this NFC this year. So
I mean, I do get the logic. I just don't like it. I think that they needed to, and I thought they were on that path of we're betting on Trey Lance. He's our guy. Let's go. And now this sends the exact opposite message in my mind. And I don't like it. I want to at least see cut his legs out right now. He hasn't even played a game yet.
Just listen to what they're trying to tell you, Frank. You just said it right there. You're like, they seem to be totally on this. And you're like, now all of a sudden they're not. Mm-hmm. What does that say? Read the message. Maybe they're sending the message.
They are sending a message, and I don't like that message. That's a problem here, Charles. It's not that the message is bad. It's that I don't like the message because I've been on this bandwagon. But we'll see. Hey, like you said, there's also a possibility Trey Lance just says, bring it on. I'm ready to go. Yep. And it pushes them to another level. And Jimmy Garoppolo does seem like the kind of guy is going to be a decent mentor and a good backup. And maybe this all works out, and it's great. But I would rather just see the San Francisco 49ers say, this is our guy. We drafted him third after trading the world to go get him. We're going to see what we got. Sorry, Jimmy. But they obviously want that protection.
I want to move on. One last thing I will say about this before we move on. We're going to move on to one of Jimmy's former teammates in Tom Brady. Ooh. Before we move on to that, though, Jimmy now, even if he does not, so he plays out the year, goes into free agency, right? He's now a 6, 7, $8 million backup the rest of his career.
Yeah, pretty set damn that bar good for money. Himself. It's pretty smart.
Yeah, man. You're loaded points, now.
He could have that Chase Daniel career where he's just, we're like watching preseason one day in 2032 and like, man, Jimmy's still around. What?
He could be Flacco. He could be one of these guys. You know, he could be playing in his late 30s, making, you know, $8-9 million a year as a good backup somewhere. Like it's, it's absolutely he could be this guy. So good for him. He just set his salary floor a lot higher than it would have been had he gotten dealt and had his contract gotten ripped up and he had to go sign. I don't think this is the money he would have gotten. I think he would have probably gotten, well, maybe this might have been similar to what he got. Maybe this is, whatever the case is, he's going to make some good money. So moving on, I did want to get to Tom Brady. Obviously, the piece of footage rolling around, he finally had a chance to talk to the media again following this 11-day hiatus from training camp. Pretty interesting. Brett, if you want to roll the audio.
It's all personal. You know, everyone's got different situations they're dealing with, so we all have really unique challenges to our life. And I'm 45 years old, man. There's a lot of shit going on. So, you know, you just got to try to figure out life the best you can. And, you know, it's a continuous process. So
yeah, so Frank, you know, it was interesting. I heard the audio. I thought it was interesting and decided to send out a tweet. Now, it'd been out there for a while, and I just said, hey, this is not a Tom Brady I've seen, you know, behind the podium, something to that effect. And it's got like, you know, thousands of retweets, 10,000 likes, like all this stuff. And I'm like, man, this video is really resonating with people for whatever reason. What is it about this that is like, did you hear it and hear what I heard was it's like some emotional territory, like, and he was pretty subdued and it felt like something that you just don't normally hear from him. He's a very glasses half full sort of individual and always has an answer for something. And in this particular case, it didn't even sound like he was riffing. It sounded like he legitimately was just like, hey, I'm 45, man. There's a lot of shit going on in my life and just trying to figure it out like everybody else. I was like, oh, okay. Yeah, that sounds familiar.
Right. And I mean, I think part of it is he's always been, because of the Patriot way and all that, he's always been very reserved. It doesn't share a lot with the public with that. You know, I remember the clip of him, you know, the kid asking at the Super Bowl, hey, who's your hero?
Dad.
And he says, Dad, and he tears up. And that's, so the rare times we do get to see kind of the human side of Tom Brady, I think it's a little jarring because we're so used to him just being so, I'm not going to say anything. I'm not going to make any waves. So for him to be very real about this, and I mean, as real as it gets, I mean, he wasn't opening up about exactly what's going on, but him just say, hey man, this is life. He's a regular dude like everybody else deals. He's got, you know, 9 figures in a bank or whatever. And he's a superstar quarterback and a very famous celebrity. He goes beyond football. But at the end of the day, he deals with stuff just like everybody else. I think that resonated. I do. And there was also the part of, you know, I mean, the curious part of people trying to figure it out. Like, I mean, it's not just Brady. I mean, Brady's married to a very, very famous woman, obviously. So there's that aspect of it. And I think even though it was a very short clip and it didn't reveal that much, it was still a little bit telling and a little bit jarring. And I think people want to know what's behind it, or just that they were kind of fascinated almost that, hey, Brady's kind of a normal dude that's just up there saying, hey, you know what, man, I'm in my mid 40s. And like a lot of us, you just got a lot going on in your life.
Yeah. And I mean, it's, you know, we've talked in the past about things that have kind of come out about, you know, this marriage with Giselle. And again, remember, in terms of fame, Brady's the junior partner. Okay. Yeah. He's the less famous person in that relationship. And, you know, so I'm sure there's a ton on both of them. There's no question constantly what surrounds them. And like you said, he was very vague about it, but there was that subdued tone and just sort of him, it felt real. Like I wasn't sitting there thinking, oh, he's bullshitting right now and trying to get out of answering something or whatever. No, it really felt like, hey, man, there's something going on. And then when you read through the comments, you know, people who were digesting the video too, I thought it was interesting because it clearly connected with a lot of like everyday normal people, you know, that were just like, man, I know that tone. Man, I know, you know, that takes me back to a place of feeling like, you know, when I went through my own stuff or whatever. It's remarkable the number of things we've heard from him the last couple of months where, and, you know, you kind of brought this up a little bit when we were talking before about, you know, kind of like where his head is at. It's interesting to me. He went on a podcast and he talked about his kids, you know, and like being worried about whether his kids are going to understand what life is really like, what reality is that, you know, and he made the comment about like, we have people who cook for us, who clean for us, who drive us to the airport when we need that, like, you know, and like looking at his kids and being like, I want them to understand, like, this isn't reality. This isn't how it really works. You know, so he talked about that, this comment that he made here. There was another thing too, where, I mean, this is a while back. I think he was talking to Sports Illustrated and he was talking about how much longer would he play. And he once again started talking about his kids and he was like, you know, I don't want to be missing out on things that I should, you know, I got, yeah. I'm like looking at my kids right now and I'm like, I got to be, you know, here with my kids. I have to be, you know, with my family. And it's getting to that point now where there's this trade-off. This just feels like this falls right into there's, I ended up writing today that like, it feels like something is off kilter with him. Like mm-hmm. I don't know what it is. I can't explain. There's something definitely different about him right now, right here, than it was a year ago. Okay. Like every other time he talked about football, this just feels like a different situation.
I just wonder, and look, whatever, trying to play amateur psychologist with a 30-second clip or even things he said in the offseason is probably a fool's errand, but you do wonder if he regrets. I wonder if he regrets coming back. He could be with his family right now. He could be, just mm-hmm. wonder, like, maybe he just, and, you know, again, we mentioned Seth's book so often because it was just so good. It was, you know, it's better to be feared, but that book really opened up this window of Brady always being worried about kind of what's happening next and also losing his job, even though he's 7 Super Bowls, most secure legacy he could possibly have. You just wonder if that's still in his head of what comes next. I'm worried about the future. I'm worried about losing my, I don't want to step away when I still have something to give. But you just wonder now that he's kind of too deep into it, he can't retire today. I guess he could, but I don't think he will. You just wonder if there's some regret. And I mean, I think that something, and not to go too, you know, 20,000 foot view here, but me and you know this from covering the league and being around these guys. A lot of people out there think of these guys as almost like characters in a movie or something. They're real people. Like, yeah, we think of the NFL as this fantasy world. In many ways, it is. They make a lot of money and they're out there in front of 70,000 people on Sunday. They're regular dudes dealing with job stress, and sometimes they hate their boss, and they're dealing with their families, and they're real people. this is the thing. Yeah. Even Tom Brady, who's one of the most famous people on the planet, and his wife, even more famous than him, they deal with real stuff. I don't know what they're dealing with, but they just deal with everyday stuff just like everybody else. We got to sometimes keep that in mind and be a little empathetic toward them too. Of, you know, yeah, they're on display for us in many ways as very famous people, as great athletes. We watch them every Sunday. We draft them on our fantasy team. We bet on the Buccaneers, all this stuff. But at the end of the day, they are real people dealing with real things.
Part of me wonders too, if he has always wondered what the end would finally feel like. You know, as you said, we cover athletes, and these are people who literally will play the game from when they're small children. Mm-hmm. Obviously, not as long as 45 years old, but they'll spend decades and decades doing this. And you always sense that fear and apprehension from, especially if you get to know some players after they leave the game. It's just like, what now? Like, what do I do now? I don't know what, you know, what am I supposed to, my whole life was geared up to this. It was a finite window that I had. Now that window's gone. And do I even know myself? You know,
and nothing can replicate it. Nothing can replicate that thrill that Tom Brady's going to get when he goes out for that first snap and Cowboys crowd is going crazy on Sunday night. Nothing going on Fox and being in the studio or whatever, he's going to, I ain't replicating it. And we've heard that a million times for former athletes, and it really hits that nothing these guys do the rest of their lives is going to be that. I mean, even if they're successful past that, it's a big, big life changer. Like you said, it's scary. This is their whole life. Like every NFL player has pretty much, I mean, I guess there's some exceptions, guys who pick it up later or whatever, but pretty much they've dedicated their whole lives to being NFL players because you have to. Like, you can't make the NFL and not be all in. Like, if you have any fatal flaw as a football player, you're not getting drafted, you're not going to make a roster, whatever. And yeah, what happens next after you've been doing this literally since you were a Pop Warner kid? It's very scary, even for Tom Brady.
Right. And you think of, like, what if you are only one of, there's only so many people who could probably truly understand Brady, like whether it's Jeter, Jordan, we talked about Serena Williams, maybe Tiger Woods. There's only so many people who have been in a space where not only did they do it for a really long time, but they did it at a level that no one's ever done it before. So you really can't, there are things that probably go through your head where you're like, most people, even other athletes, don't really understand, you know, maybe they understand part of what this feels like, but I, other than maybe like he and Jordan and, or like Serena having that conversation or Tiger, like that's to me, that's a whole other stratosphere of emotion and pressure and money and expectation and what it's done to their relationships. And I mean, you just look at, I mean, think of the athletes alone, Michael Jordan, you know, it took a toll on his relationship aspects of, you know, his career and what he went through. And then Tiger Woods, obviously it was very public and took a toll on his relationship. And there was things that went into that. And yeah, I don't know, man, it's a lot. And it's just weird. And I don't, you know, I don't want to be ridiculous here and be like overly like, oh my gosh, so empathetic. So there's so much sympathy for Tom right now or anything, but it's interesting. Just kind of see someone who you think is Teflon.
Yeah. I agree.
Kind of show that they're not.
Yeah. Not just 7 Super Bowl rings and millions of dollars. People always do that. They're like, oh, he's so rich. What has he got wrong? Like, no, that there's other things more important than fame and money and all that. And, you know, I just hope, you know, I'm just, as a dude, I hope he's doing okay. I hope everything's good with him. I hope he's comfortable with his decisions he's made to play this year and all that kind of stuff. Because, you know, he's been, like you said, on this, basically he's been more, in Seth's book, again, to reference it, he's really been famous beyond football for, I mean, when did that start? About 2004, 2005. Seth's book really talked about that turn for him where he won probably the second Super Bowl. He's been this, you know, really glaring light for 18, 19 years. And that's it's not easy. It can be a tough life at times.
All right. Well, let's move on. We wanted to talk about some more divisions. We already did AFC North, NFC East, NFC West. So today I figure we could talk about the AFC East and the AFC West. And if we get the time, we'll see. Maybe AFC South. Let's see how we go through AFC East and West. First and foremost, the East. I wonder, you know, Matt Araiza, obviously the punter, who's been accused of rape along with two former San Diego State teammates in a civil suit. This is a pretty huge, I don't even know how to really describe, like, I think it could affect the Bills organization maybe more than people fully understand. Because I don't think it's going away. I think there's going to be that question of like time, like, hey, you decided not to part ways with him when you first heard this. It looked like you were standing by him and then something changed. And like how much time passed? Why did that opinion change? Whatever. So even though he's gone off the roster, I do think there's still going to be some criticism there for maybe how the Bills handled it. The Bills have given us every other reason to love them going into this season in terms of football and what they could be. I'm just curious whether this has any kind of actual football impact, any kind of actual overhang. You know, I mean, maybe the players doesn't matter at all, but it just, this is a pretty big deal, and it's they've been a terrible focal point now for a while.
Yeah, and I think that them realizing we got cut this guy. Like, I think that, I don't want to say people move on after that, but they probably, it's different if he's still on the roster, of course. Like, they at least were smart enough to realize, like, even if whatever their rationale was, like, okay, now all the public heat is on us and we've been kind of found out. Now we got to get rid of this guy. At least they did that because this is not something football-wise that they wanted hanging over this franchise, but it will hang over the franchise a bit going forward. Like you said, I don't think you just escaped this. I don't think I remember draft day. I don't know if we texted about it, but I remember probably, you know, when Eric was still working with us and all that, texting him, like, why is this punter not going? Like, it was the big deal. And another punter went before him. And it was just strange. Yeah. Now, probably we understand it. And it would be interesting to know, what did the Bills know? When did you know it? How long did you, all that kind of stuff. And until we know those exact answers, you know, I mean, it could even look worse for the Bills if we ever find out the exact truth.
So I've yet to hear from another team that they knew this specific allegation. Now, I have had two other teams tell me that they had red flags on them, like character flags. And, you know, they wouldn't say exactly what that was, but it sounded to me like he was either off their boards or he was a subboard player for them on draft day. And interestingly enough, like you said, I mean, he goes in the, I think he went in like the sixth round, right? He was,
yeah,
he was
fifth or sixth. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, it was a lot deep. Like we, it was potential that he could have been maybe third round pick, fourth round
pick.
Yeah,
it seemed like he could be like a top 100. Like yeah. This, he's booting the ball for 70 yards to San Diego State. And that, of course, you know, when you're scouting a guy, like, okay, he kicks the ball 70 yards. There's no nuance to that. He could boot the heck out of the ball, but yet he went in a fifth round. So you just want, like you said, like character concerns from other teams. What did the Bills know? When did they know it? How long were they just hoping this would never come out? I don't really know. And I don't think that the truth would look very good on the Buffalo Bills, and they're gonna have to deal with this for a while.
You know, I don't want to pile on the Bills here. You know, they did the right thing, which was to part company. I thought to listen to Brandon Bean talk about I'm a general manager, he's a coach, meaning Sean McDermott. There were a lot of different versions of this, the, you know, what happened here, and we don't have the two, we're not equipped, like myself as a general manager, him as a head coach, to get to the bottom of it, at least right then, right at that, you know, time. I get that. And I do think there is some credence to that. However, this does fall into, Sue L. Robinson said it when she was talking about Deshaun Watson and the league being a forward-facing league, but not a forward-looking league, like that they just, it's reactionary to everything that ultimately happens. And this felt reactionary because we do know that they did become aware of these allegations, and time definitely passed before they ultimately decided to part company with him. And we know what happened during that expanse of time. A civil suit was filed and everything. I mean, the media exploded on this case and on the Buffalo Bills. So it definitely looks like a reactionary type of a situation. And football wise, I still love everything about Buffalo. I still think Buffalo is a Super Bowl favorite. I don't think there's any question about that. It will be really interesting to see what Von Miller adds to the mix here. This feels like the team that if they don't go to the Super Bowl this year, like it's getting to that point where it would be a little disappointing to not see them take that next step. I don't imagine that you're going to have 13 seconds happen to you again against a team like the Kansas City Chiefs. But this is certainly not the best way mentally and maybe emotionally for the organization to be starting the season.
You know, when I did my countdown of my team previews, there's no question the Bills had to be number one. Like, you look at their roster and it's like, this is the best roster in football. And there's just honestly no question about it. Like, in my mind anyway, I don't think anybody comes. That doesn't mean they're going to win, though. And I will say this, and you kind of touched on this. It would feel disappointing if they don't make a Super Bowl. I grew up for a long time in Wisconsin, where I know what it's like to be in the fishbowl. I know what it's, and I covered the Packers for a few years too, where this is not LA, where the Rams could just blend in. The Buffalo Bills, every single day, are going to have to hear about, hey, this is the year. We're going to do it. We're going to get that. How does that affect you? I mean, there's a lot of pressure on these guys to finally get this done. The Bills famously have never won a Super Bowl. They've come close, obviously. And now everybody in Buffalo's got to be feeling like, this is it. We're going to do it. We're going to get it done. And I don't think the Bills players can escape that pressure. That's a lot to carry on your shoulders all year. Doesn't mean they won't do it. They got the best team, top to bottom. I mean, deep at receiver. The defense was not. They could end up with the number one defense and the number one offense in the NFL this year. That's how good they are. Josh Allen could win an MVP. They could have one of those 15-2 type of seasons. They're that good, but the pressure is going to be intense, really, really intense on them to win it all. Because as crazy as it sounds for a team that's really had no success since that fourth Super Bowl loss, if they don't win a Super Bowl this year, everybody in Buffalo is going to be disappointed. And that's a really hard thing to live up to.
And they didn't even have that kind of pressure last year. They were, you know, we were kind of a popular bandwagon, but it was sort of like everybody knew, oh, it's a popular bandwagon, like this is going to be a trendy pick, but it wasn't necessarily pressure. Now it's sort of like, okay, well, we're in that window now. You are what you are. You're a great team. Now there's legitimate Super Bowl pressure. Inside the division, though, the Patriots,
did you watch a preseason finale? Because I was sitting here while they played in Vegas. They played their starters for four series, I believe. Yeah. And I believe it was three and out interception, three and out fumble or something. It was like, oh my goodness, this is bad. And we've both been on the whole, hey, whatever, Belichick's gonna figure it out. This is August stuff. Let's not freak out. But you watch it, and they're playing against the Raiders backup defense, and they can't get anything going. Mac throws a terrible interception, and you're like, man, this is all right. Like, I still have faith in Belichick, but it is not looking pretty for them.
You and I talked about it. I've been on the sort of sidelines of this for the whole preseason. I'm, working it out. You know, obviously lose an OC who's been there forever. Mac Jones isn't a finished product yet. Look at the skill positions around him. But now I'm to the point, and I did see that game, and that was it. I watched like the first like 12 minutes of it. And then, I was like,
maybe I'm wrong. It was alarming. Even if it happened against the Raiders starters, you'd be like, ooh, this isn't that great. It happened against their backups. Watched other teams, like Miami piled up 48 points because the Eagles were like, we're not playing any starters. You saw that over a bunch of teams. One team plays starters, the other team plays backups. The team plays starters, their offense just going up and down the field at will. If you play against the Raiders are the deepest defense in the world.
Right.
Not the way the Patriots want to go in this season. Let's put it that way.
No. Nothing that you would have hoped would be resolved when camp started has really resolved itself. If anything, it has seemingly gotten worse. You know, I don't know that the play calling situation offensively, not only does it not feel settled, it feels like it could be something that flip. I mean, I look at it, I'm like, this could they change hands in terms of play callers? Like, could it end up being a situation where two or three different coaches end up handing off play calling duties this year?
It's probably going to be Bill totally at some point, right?
There's
a rumor out there in the offseason that was going to happen. And now you look and it's like the Patriots beat writers are sitting up in a press box like, wow, Matt Patricia goes from calling to plays a coaching the offensive line between series and Joe Judge is over with Mac and this. It's a strange setup to have right now. And it's, we'll see. I mean, Bill always figures it out, but it's not looking good so far.
I'm curious if it goes horribly. I don't know when I look at the Patriots roster, I don't know how they get out of this. Like, I don't know offensively the pieces around Mac. Like, I'm like, okay, there's not a lot. Okay. You invested a wide receiver, you know, that's already an injury situation that's going to impact the team. I don't know. I look at the surrounding pieces. I'm like, they need some strong drafts. They need some strong offensive pieces.
They need to hit on a receiver, man.
I don't even know how to. We keep repeating. We've run it to death for years and years and years with that organization. And yet it's like you still can't not talk about it because it's so unbelievably glaring. I mean, it was like when you talked about the Browns and quarterbacks forever. Right. Remember? It was like, here's the jersey with the 78 names. That's how it is at wide receiver, I swear. You know,
I will say it real quick in defense of the Patriots offense. The sum was kind of greater than whole of the parts last year. They did have a top 10 offense, DVOA and all that, if you believe that. I do. If you look, I mean, two good running backs in Harris and Stevenson. Hunter Henry did have a productive year at tight end. They don't have one alpha receiver, but Myers is a pretty good player. Bourne is okay. Devontae Parker has had flashes in the NFL. They do have some guys. Their offensive line is not as good, but they don't have that one.
Single,
they don't. Yeah, you're right. They don't have that.
They have a single elite.
I know.
Skill position player. Not one.
I know.
There's not. They don't have a single skill position player that I would put in the top five at their position.
You're correct. Probably not even top 10. I mean, wherever you put, probably Damian Harris is the top rated one. Like, and I don't know if he's the top 15 running back. Maybe. He's probably a little underrated. But yeah, you're right. They don't. But they did have a good offense last year. But how much of that was McDaniels? We're going to find out.
The good thing for them is I still think they're in a division where most of the you still have two other teams in the Dolphins and Jets that are they're trying to figure it out. Miami, curious what you thought. I watched some of Miami actually last night. It feels to me like there are moments where I watch Tua, okay? And I feel like the Dolphins season is going to be focused on Tua, as it should be, because you have to make a decision one way or another in the organization. I think this is going to be it. This is the watershed year for him. There are moments where I watch him and I go, no, you know what? Mike McDaniel, they could potentially get this right. Like maybe he is salvageable. And then there are other times that I watch him and I feel like he's like one hit away from it all falling apart. Like, I'm like, he's going to take off running. He's going to get killed. And then it's going to be like an injury situation. And then everything's ultimately going to go sideways. Have you seen enough of him? Have you seen enough from him in the preseason to feel like, hey, maybe all he just really lacked was a head coach who believed in him, which mm-hmm. I don't think no. Flo did. And then B, you know, some absolute top shelf, no question, elite players, which he clearly has at the wide receiver position. He's got two of them.
Yeah, and I think at this point, all the optimism is just over supporting cast. And you say Waddle caught 100 balls last year, set the NFL rookie single season record for receptions. Tyreek's the top five receiver in the NFL, maybe higher, maybe top two. You know, I mean, he's that good. They're going to run the ball. Like, I mean, McDaniel comes from the Shanahan tree, and they always right. have running games. And you saw it, I mean, in the preseason finale, I know the Eagles didn't really take it seriously, but every one of their dudes that was coming in was running the ball. It was Mostert, it was Gaskin, it was yep. even Ahmed. They had guys coming in, and they were just gashing the Eagles, whatever that's worth. But you feel like, okay, Dolphins are going to be able to run the ball. Their offensive line is a lot better. They got two stud receivers now. But I don't know. Tua's probably going to be propped up by those guys, but I don't think on his own he's that great of an option. It's going to be interesting to see kind of where it falls at the end of the year if they just say, well, I mean, do we start over? We just use the top five pick on this guy. But they could, because if it doesn't work for him this year, it's like, well, you can't go add anymore. They added Teron Armstead and Tyreek Hill. No. Like, I mean, no. this is you got to do it at some point, and it'll be really interesting to see where we are with Tua at the end of the year. I'm not that high on him, and I don't see this team as a playoff team.
I think they're in the same box as I put the Eagles in terms of if you're a now, and remember, that's one thing too. Remember, they lost the first round pick in the Stephen Ross investigation.
I forgot.
So unlike the Eagles, they don't have multiple first round picks that they can trade unless you're going to rob from future years to position yourself for another quarterback. But I do think like the Eagles, they are in prime position to pivot. Whether it's a veteran who we didn't realize was going to become available, who's a quality player, we could go after that player next offseason, or you know you got a chance to draft a rookie. It's a good team.
They got some pieces.
We'll see what McDaniel looks like as a head coach. Unless he just completely flops, this looks like a really good team, and I'd be pretty optimistic if I was a quarterback, you know, heading in there. So at the very least, they have. If it doesn't go perfectly, they should still be attractive. And we're not like at the back end of a window here for the Dolphins. I still feel like they're just getting to the point now where they could really flip a switch if they had the right quarterback. I do want, before we move on from the Dolphins, I want to mention, just say that my heart goes out to the family of Jason Jenkins. Jason, who worked in communications for the Dolphins, knew Jason going all the way back to when he was in San Francisco. He passed away over the weekend, and just one of those things, you know, I think he's 47 years old. I mean, just completely out of left field, could not believe it when I heard the news. It was striking to me the number of agents, coaches, people in front offices, other people that are in, you know, communications, the texts, you know, kind of texting people about this. Like after it had happened, you just realize what a huge impact he really had on a lot of people. And it seems like anybody who went through, you know, worked with him in the early years of the 49ers or went through that Dolphins organization and all the years that he's been there, he really had an impact on a lot of people. So I don't know if you ever had a chance to meet Jason.
But a little bit, yeah. Great. Yeah, great. And I echo everything you said, of course. Just very sad situation.
Just want to send out condolences to his wife and three children and obviously friends and colleagues that had a chance to get to know Jason. So he will definitely be missed. Moving on to the Jets. The Jets are going to have to start Joe Flacco. And I told you when I went through there, he looked like the slowest human being I think I'd ever seen on an NFL route. Like he's never been fleet of foot. His feet look like the cement has built up over the years. I don't even know what to say. At the very least, I guess, if Zach Wilson is not out for the year, that to me ends up being kind of the, oh, okay, well, thank goodness they didn't lose him for an entire year of development. But I mean, this, if I hope the Jets, when I look at this roster and how difficult the season is going to be, and I hate to say this because Jets fans do not want to hear it, just put them in bubble wrap as long as you need to. Don't worry about wins and losses. Like, just try to get your quarterback back, whether it's midseason, late season, whatever, when he's 100% healthy. And, oh, by the way, you feel like you can protect him. I don't think this is what they're trying to do, but it's just, I don't see this being a good team right now with the injuries that they've had and just kind of the bad juju that's existed.
Yeah, it's hard. I mean, I was kind of excited for them for a while this offseason. They've had two, I think, good drafts in a row. I think they're building some. They got some pieces.
I agree.
You know, your Elijah Moore's. Yeah, I mean, you got the Brees Hall.
I like Garrett Wilson.
Brees Hall hasn't done anything this preseason, but I think he's going to be a good player. Like their picks they made this year, all that kind of stuff. But then you get to now, and it's like, I don't know. I will say this: like last year, four quarterbacks played for the Jets, and Zach Wilson was worst of the four. And that can't happen again this year. What if I know Joe? You know, Joe could do what he does. He's going to be a pocket passer. He can throw the ball. He could probably still rip it. What if Joe looks better than Zach Wilson? Like, I mean, what if we're sitting there saying,
come on,
he did last year. I'm just saying, like, Mike White looked better than him, and Josh Johnson looked better than him, and Joe Flacco looked better than him. And it's like, this is not good. I want to see Zach Wilson come out of the season with some positive vibes of like this. Okay, he was the second pick of the draft. Now we've seen it. Now, okay, we can go forward to year three. I don't know. It was not a good rookie year for him. And his second year is not getting off to a good start, obviously.
I think, you know, you have to be able to protect him. Okay. Like it doesn't, like, I don't know how, when I was there in practice, Becton went down. Okay, fine. I mean, but the line, it was going to be a protection problem, I think, anyway. Yeah. I mean, it was something they were worried about already going into the season. And that's why it's not a talent issue in terms of the additions the last couple of years. I agree with you. I'm up on the Jets. I feel like to me, this was actually year one. And what I mean by that is the general manager, Joe Douglas, I think a large part of that job for probably longer than it should have been, but unfortunately that was the state of affairs, was trying to offload some pieces of the roster, trying to get the salary cap where it needed to be, let ownership kind of re-solidify with Woody Johnson coming back into the fold. He made some great trades. You know, he traded all, like Jamal Adams trade, the Sam Darnold trade were fantastic trades. And then, you know, he had some quality picks. I think they were involved in terms of A.J. Brown, you know, Tyreek Hill. Like the wide receiver conversations did not exclude the Jets, which is, I think, is a positive sign in terms of them really wanting to be aggressive to build around Zach Wilson. So as far as the overall organization, I'm not dinging them. I'm just saying, like, I feel like it's all about the quarterback. It has to be about the quarterback. And what I'm scared of is that he ends up back in there in October, you know, and he's not right.
Yeah.
And then it's like he either suffers another injury or it's catastrophic mentally, you know, that he's because like you said, I mean, it was clearly rough rookie season. I don't think you can stack two of those on top of each other. I don't think Trevor Lawrence can have another one of those. I don't think Justin Fields can have another one of those. I don't think Zach Wilson can have another one of those. I think when you get a rookie quarterback, I don't remember who it was, but someone might even been someone that was on the show kind of said, hey, by year three, like you really, they have to be moving. Like there's got to be momentum. They have to be playing, you know, kind of up to what you thought the standard would be. Most quarterbacks, if they have year one and two, you don't see a lot of quarterbacks in year three, other than like what Drew Brees.
I mean, if you're drafted in the top five, it's different because you're married.
Right.
And that's why Daniel Jones is starting week one for the New York Giants. That's the only reason. So I don't know. And this kind of gives Zach Wilson another out of, hey, I was hurt. I hurt my knee early in the year, and the Jets can talk themselves into another year. I mean, it's just hard to move on from the second pick of the draft contractually. Like it's not something that's easy to do. Like you don't want to do it. And it's going to be a really interesting year for him. And I hope he shows progress because the NFL is better when quarterback play is good. He showed a lot at BYU. You hope he takes those steps forward. And you're right. I do hope that, you know, if the Jets are 0-3, 0-4, you know, Robert Saleh probably doesn't have the longest leash in the world. I mean, they're not going to let him just go 2-15 this year. So you worry like, okay, we got to get our quarterback back on the field here. You're right. This could go sideways for the Jets in a hurry, but I am interested to see. Let's see what they got. Let's see. Look, they're going to have a veteran in there. And I'm not saying, look, Joe Flacco for many years, as much as we banged on him, was a competent NFL quarterback in the NFL. And I get it. He's, you know, at the end, as far as physically goes, maybe he could just maybe, you know, for a few weeks they can take some strides with him just kind of managing the offense and being Joe Flacco.
I'm Mr. Positivity over here. It is your optimism on Trey Lance and Joe Flacco. I just don't what's going on here?
Same guy. Like, I'm just saying, like, is it outrageous to think that Joe Flacco could actually help the Jets win Zach Wilson? That's not what Jets fans want to hear, but
that's a disaster. It's a complete utter.
But it happened last year.
No, it's a cratering like that. No, but that's awful. You do not want
no.
It's the worst possible scenario.
That's what I was trying to say before. Yeah. We look back at the end of the 2022 Jets season and say, boy, Zach Wilson wasn't even the best team on a quarterback on his team this year again. Like, that would be – you're not trying to go any offseason thinking that. But it's not out of the realm of possibility either.
I will say the silver lining, Flacco is adequate enough that I think he could be – you know, do I think he's a starting quarterback? Yeah, he's 32nd best starting quarterback in the league, 30th, 31st, whatever. But he's not – I think he's just adequate enough as a starter to – be able to look at maybe some other, you know, the running backs. We should be able to see what those running backs, you know, look like, the tandem. We should be able to look at where's Garrett Wilson at.
Elijah
Moore. Yeah. The receivers, there's no question. So certain components of the team with Flacco in there, we should be able to at least get a measure. It's not like it's, you know, putting just a god awful backup in it and you're like, well, he just ruins everything. There's no way to have any idea. No,
I can't even evaluate. Yeah. I don't think Joe's at that point where you're just like, oh my goodness, like,
right,
they could sign somebody off the street and do. No. Joe, he'll be fine, I guess, whatever. Like, he'll be, I'll watch because it's NFL football. We'll see what the Jets bring to the table this year.
Okay, well, let's move on to a very, very fun division, AFC West, man. I'm like, and by the way, if you're still listening, we're not getting the AFC South. AFC West is going to AFC West is going to take a minute.
We talked too much.
And AFC West is going to suck some oxygen out of the room for sure.
Real quick, let me ask you this. We've both been covering the league 20-ish years. Best division you've ever seen on paper coming into a season? It's hard because you don't have that cataloged in your head, but I can't remember a division where I'm like, the fourth best team in this division is probably a playoff quality team with a playoff quality quarterback. Like, that's the quarterback level especially is unheard of, at least in my memory. Maybe I'm just forgetting, a 2006 NFC East or what, you know, something random. But this is a really good division. Really, really good.
I would like to see maybe some listeners can come in on this. You know, if you could find a season in which a four-team division had four quarterbacks of this quality. Because like Mahomes is going to be a Hall of Famer, one of the greatest we've ever seen play. Russell Wilson's going to be a Hall of Famer. You know, is statistically, he'll put up big numbers, still got a number of years left in him. Justin Herbert could potentially be the best statistical quarterback in history, just as Mahomes could be. So that's two guys who statistically, by the time they're done, could just be, be like looking at Peyton Manning and Drew Brees next to each other and going like, oh my God, their numbers are all just insane. And then Derek Carr is a good, like, he's a good quarterback. Like, he's just a good quarterback. But he's not great. He's not, you know, I don't think he's top 10, but I also don't think he's, you know, he's definitely not bottom 10. I think he's in that top 15 range where you're like, oh yeah, we could totally win a Super Bowl with that guy.
Right. He could have a huge season too.
Statistically,
he's got some guys to throw to, man.
Yeah, he could. Well, Darren Waller, we'll see. I'm curious to see how the Darren Waller thing works out.
That's a little troubling, yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He's got to be on the field and, you know, happy. And that's huge. But yeah, statistically, Carr could. I highly doubt he's going to put up bigger numbers than anybody, you know, all three of these other quarterbacks. Yeah, but he could, it's not up, completely
he could
out of.
He could put up 4,800 yards and still be the fourth best quarterback in the division. Seriously, like that sounds crazy, but it's true. He was last. He basically put up those kind of numbers last year. And then you add Devontae Adams, who's, I mean, if we're talking about non-quarterbacks, just because their value is so much different than everybody else, Devontae Adams is probably a top 10 non-quarterback in the NFL as far as, and his contract reflects that. I think he's fourth right now in non-quarterback contracts. He's elite. He's a Hall of Famer. Like, I mean, Devontae Adams probably going to Hall of Fame someday, unless his career gets cut short for some bad reason. He's on that path. So you add a guy like that to the offense, and Josh McDaniels calling plays. Derek Carr could have a monster season and still be the fourth best quarterback in the division.
Offensive line, though, really
scary. It's rough. Yeah, it is rough.
It is really scary. I mean, you're you're already talking about cutting like a high pick. And, you know, I
ooh,
mean,
what it's a just, disaster it's, that pick was. You don't hear about that very often. A first round pick, last one and done. Like that's
you say his name.
Alex Leatherwood.
Yeah, we should probably mention his
Alex
name.
Alex Leatherwood. Who's been,
just talking. It's like we don't even want to say his name.
I know. It was, it's just oof. You can't just absolutely whiff on picks like that. And they did. They've had some bad drafts. Everybody's going to blame John Gruden instead of Mike Mayock, but I guess. But they had a chance to really build that thing. Like if they hit on those draft picks that they got for the Khalil Mack trade and all that, we're talking about the Raiders as a Super Bowl contender, maybe. Like, but they just missed on so many of those picks when they had a real chance to build that thing up.
All right, so I guess that encapsulates what we think of the Raiders. I'll just say, having gone through there, and I watched solid amount of their preseason. You know, I tried to watch like the first quarter of like every team every week until it got to the point where no starters were being played. But I feel like when I look at their offense, and again, it's hard to tell without, you want to see everybody out there. You want to, you know, look at what the full complement is. I was a little surprised by the Kenyon Drake, you know, departure, but I don't think they have it figured out yet. Like, I don't know that they know offensively necessarily what I think they're going to ultimately look like.
And part of that is something you touched on, where Darren Waller hasn't practiced.
Right.
I mean, it's hard to get that identity going when probably your second best player is basically been sidelined all of August. That really does set them back a little bit, I think. But we'll see where that goes. Foster Moreau, fine backup. He'll fill in.
Yeah.
But I mean, yeah, I think that's part of the reason. I would assume you agree with that just not having Waller practice time has kind of set them back as an offense a little bit.
I think, and remember, he was someone who wasn't healthy last season. And it's my thing is, like, if he's healthy, if he's 100%, okay, if you can get him back to that point and get him on the field, it dramatically changes the offense, because now you have basically sort of a version of Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce in terms of having two super dynamic players that are really difficult matchups for opposing defenses. And having one of those guys is awesome. Having two can exponentially
and
change.
And having Renfro was awesome last year.
Renfro too.
It was really good. And he's perfect. Like, I mean, I know it's lazy to be like, oh, he's going to be the Julian Edelman. Well, he kind of will be. Like, you know, Josh McDaniels loves the slot receiver, and he's going to find a way to get Hunter Renfro 80 passes too. I mean, that's another reason why Derek Carr, why he might just have a really, really big year.
Yeah. So I think, though, we agree that's probably the team that has the toughest road to hoe, particularly considering the fact that, as you said, Waller hasn't practiced and the offensive line is pretty jacked up right now. What about the Chargers? I think the Chargers are interesting from the standpoint of, I think because of Hill departing Kansas City, it drew kind of a spotlight on Kansas City and like where are they, you know, how are they going to make up for him not being there? What else can they develop? And then Russ going, it weirdly enough, it feels like they completely got left out of the spotlight this offseason because of the fact that McDaniels goes to the Raiders and then they deal for Davante Adams. Big deal. You know, Russell Wilson ends up in Denver.
And so also the Rams taking up all the NFL oxygen in LA too.
And all the right. Yeah, even in their own backyard. Yeah, right. Yeah. It's weird. Like, it kind of felt like, even though I felt like it was a good offseason for them, especially in terms of like just retaining what you needed to retain, like signing the guys that you needed to sign, it feels like a quiet. And is that good though? Like, maybe that's a positive. Maybe that's what they needed, was an offseason where I don't think people have looked at the Chargers. Obviously Chargers fans have, but I think when most people have focused on the AFC West, there's been a lot of conversations to be had rather than just the, okay, now, like this time last year, what were we talking about? Well, they're going to take the big step up, right? Like, this is the year where they finally break through, and, you know, they got a head coach who's, every time he talks, we want to tune in and listen to what he says, and kind of been quiet for them.
I mean, I know a lot of the football nerds are on the Chargers because you look at this roster, like me being a football nerd, I can say that. You look at this roster and you're like, how does this team not win 12 games? Seriously, you look at this roster up and down. Eckler is one of the top running backs in the league. He's a fantastic weapon. They have not just Keenan Allen and Mike Williams, who they spent to retain, but Josh Palmer's excellent number three. Their offensive line has turned from a problem to a strength. They're probably a top 10 offensive line now. You go and you get J.C. Jackson and Khalil Mack for your defense, which already had some guys on it. All of a sudden, like, where are the Chargers' weakness? Like, other than just the Chargers' history of always doing this to us, where you look at the roster and you're like, oh my God, there's a champion. And they just don't do it. I even think Staley's going to be better his second year. he was on the extremes of, I'm going to take this new age coaching to the next level. And he was doing the, don't go for it on fourth down in your own 18. Like, just, there's sometimes you need to pull it back a little bit. And sometimes field goals are okay too. Like, that's totally reasonable. But I think Staley learns from that. And I think he's got the pieces now to run his offense or run his defense a little bit better. He's an excellent defensive coach with the Rams. And I think that this team operated exactly how you should operate when you have a good rookie quarterback on his rookie deal. Not rookie, good quarterback on his rookie deal, where they just said, yeah, we're going to overpay for J.C. Jackson. Yeah, we're going to overpay for Khalil Mack. Yeah, we're going to bring Mike Williams back as kind of a luxury kind of signing because they have all this extra cap. They have all this extra money. Go chase it. Go try to get this thing. I thought the Chargers had an awesome offseason. And there's no reason this team shouldn't be a Super Bowl contender on paper. They are fantastic up and down.
And the funny thing is, too, like, as I said, they had a quiet up. People are going to go, well, geez, they traded for Khalil Mack. That's not quiet. They went and signed the top corner in free agency. That's not quiet. Those stories, I mean, it was just like a blip on the radar. And then everybody kind of went back to every other thing that was going on this offseason.
Because of the quarterback inside, movement, yeah.
Right, including inside their own division, right. too. But, you know, as you said, I mean, those are – I think it's a positive that it, at least you could talk about the analytics crowd. That's fine. But I mean, I think it's a positive that by and large, everybody's not jumping on the Chargers aside from the analytics crowd. I don't hear everybody jump. It's people are still talking about the Bills. Got to be the Bills, right? Or, you know, what's going to happen with Russ in Denver now? You know, that roster looks pretty complete now built around him and all these different things. And to me, I do. I think it's a positive that it's kind of flying under the radar, made some really good defensive additions, signed the offensive pieces you had to sign. I expect Justin Herbert is going to continue to – the arrow is not pointed upward. It's basically in space at this
Man,
point.
Man, he's good. I can't shake that Week 18 game against the Raiders where it was just like, oh, here's fourth down. The Chargers finally – no. Justin Herbert just completed another fourth down pass. So now it's fourth down again. And no, Justin Herbert kept the game alive. He was – awesome in that game. Like, he was just that was the star turn for me, where it's like, no, Justin Herbert isn't just a really good quarterback. Justin Herbert's a superstar. Like, this guy is, man, he could win an MVP easily this year. I don't even think it would surprise anybody. He's that good. And he's got the guys that look, when Mike Williams and Keenan Allen are battling it out to see who's your number one receiver, you got it pretty good. Like, those guys are really, really good.
Before we move on, interestingly enough, about Jackson, and it's I only bring it up because it was kind of weird that I had two different teams mention it to me. When I went through training camp this year, I asked a lot of GMs, cap individuals, hey, what's the next position? Like, I didn't expect to see the explosion in wide receiver money. Is there another position? I was like, is there another position where there's going to be an explosion of money? Like, what's coming? What do I need to be prepared for? In the course of those conversations, two different teams said to me, and this was because they were talking about the cornerback market. They both thought that Jackson, that was a way better deal than they thought that Jackson was going to end up getting 20 plus. And when the Chargers signed, they're like, actually, we kind of thought it was a little, they both thought it was a little bit of a bargain for the Chargers. So I thought, you know, I mean, technically every free agent is overpaid when they get to a certain point, no matter what. But I did think that was interesting that two different teams mentioned they thought that was a really, actually kind of an economical pickup for them. We'll do Chiefs last. I want to talk about the Broncos. Floor is yours. I got a couple of things to say about the Broncos, but I'm really curious to hear what you think of Hackett.
Yeah, and I think he's going to be fine. We don't know. That's the thing. Projecting rookie head coaches is really tough, but people out here in Denver, and I'm based in Denver, are freaking out over the preseason. Like, oh my goodness, they look so bad against the Bills. It doesn't matter. We don't know what the Broncos are, what they're going to be. I thought Hackett move was fine. Like, I mean, he comes from a fairly good tree and all that. He's got a decent history. I think he's going to be fine. I think he's a forward-thinking guy. I think until proven otherwise, it's a good hire. I'll say this, and I think we talked about this earlier. This is the most excited I've been living in Denver almost 20 years. Most excited I've ever seen this state for the Broncos season. Because if you remember, like,
really?
Yes, because the Peyton Manning years. Think about the Peyton Manning years. He was coming off that neck thing where he couldn't throw the ball 10 yards. Nobody really knew what Peyton Manning was. Nobody knew he was going to have four great years left in him, or I guess three in a Super Bowl at the end. And it was like and then the 2012 season happens and they lose like they did to the Ravens and everybody has that hangover for a while, the Super Bowl hangover. Like, there's been such bad quarterback play. And every year it's this whole like Trevor Siemian or Paxton Lynch or Case Keenum or Joe Flacco. Now they got a guy. Like, they have a legitimate quarterback. And I think everybody's just all in on this team until, I guess, the preseason and some of the failures. You know, you poured some cold water on it. It shouldn't, but it did. But yes, over the course of the summer, I don't think I've seen this state more excited for a Broncos season than this one over the last 20 years, because I think people could just see, like everybody talks about, this roster is good, and maybe they're just a quarterback away. Now, I push back on it a little bit because this isn't the 2015 defense anymore. It's good. It's not great. They need Bradley Chubb to get it going. He's become a ghost. And he had that great rookie year, and then he's dealt with injuries, and I get it. That's hard. But he played 7 games last year and didn't have 1 sack. Like, they need him to really step up. They need Randy Gregory to be what they paid for. There's some things on that defense that need to come together. I think Patrick Surtain's going to be a superstar at the corner, and that's a good building piece, but they need to have some guys in the front 7 really step up to get back to this defense being really good. The offense has a lot of pieces. I like everything about the Broncos. I don't like them as much as the Chargers, but if you told me at the end of the year the Broncos ended up being the best team in the AFC West and they played in the AFC Championship game, wouldn't surprise me, just because maybe this team was just a quarterback away.
When I went through it, was granted it was the very beginning of training camp. You know, obviously people are going to be, you know, losing their minds at that point with excitement. Defensively, one thing that got brought to my attention while I was there, they had just made the move with Baron Browning. They had taken him and put him as positioned him more as an edge player. And there was definitely some optimism inside the team that Browning could end up being maybe even a double-digit sack guy by the end of the season, you know, depending on. And
he had a really, they need something like that to pop. Yep.
He's had a good camp. You know, he had a good camp. He had a good preseason. I think he's right where they want him right now. I think I actually think he picked up a fumble and ran back for a touchdown over the weekend. To me, that was sort of that thought process. Like, if we can, okay, Chubb, Gregory, and if we can get a third, you know, player to really become a pressure type of edge guy who, you know, can create some havoc situationally. And I kind of feel like that's the guy that they're really hoping steps up. Now, we'll see if it happens. I think they're optimistic. I don't think they're out there promising it at this point. You got to see it once the season starts. But yeah, to me, I think if you can get Chubb, I think that guy's probably gone that we thought he was going to be, you know, after all the injuries. But I think if you can get him to 7-8 kind of sack guy, you know, provides pressure. If Gregory's another guy too. He wasn't a finished product in Dallas. You know, he wasn't someone that when I looked at him and he was signed, I was like, there's no guarantee that he ends up in Denver and becomes a double digit sack guy. He's definitely got the talent. A lot of questions.
Yeah, they need it though. I mean, we just listed the quarterbacks. I mean, you're facing Herbert twice, you're facing Mahomes twice, you're facing Derek Carr twice.
The secondary is good, but
need to get after the quarterback. Yeah, the secondary.
You're right.
Justin Simmons
you're right.
is awesome. Right. Surtain, right. I think, is going to be a star. But you need to get after the quarterback or else you're in for a long, at least divisional games.
I think offensively they feel like if they're not there now, they're going to get there. They feel good, as you know, notwithstanding, let's see how many injuries happen. Yeah. You know,
and they already lost Tim Patrick, out there like Tim, who, but he's a good football player, really, really underrated part of what they do. And now they need somebody like a KJ Hamler, maybe Albert O takes a bigger role at tight end. Not that Noah Fant's gone in that Russ Wilson trade. So there's still some questions. Yeah, I have more questions about the Broncos, I think, than I do the Chargers, as weird as that sounds. But I think that, yeah, the Broncos, it's going to be a fun season for them.
The Chiefs. Save the Chiefs for last, partially because we have a solid Chiefs fan base, listeners. I think the Chiefs I'm extremely intrigued by. I really want to see what this offense ends up looking like. I feel like it's going to be boom or bust. I really do. I love Mahomes. Love him. Think he's going to be a brilliant player. I think you take Hill away from the Chiefs, and I think you and I even kind of discussed this at one point, either you become a team where you don't feel like you have to necessarily quote unquote force feed a guy, or you're not worried about it so much and you start to spread it around and you become a little less predictable, right? Or it's the bust part of it where Hill was what he was. He was dynamic. He was a problem. Every single team that ever faced him felt like if they don't put two players on him automatically, if they don't shade the secondary toward him, you're going to end up getting murdered. And they often did. Convince me it's going to be in between. Convince me it's not going to be boom or bust. Convince me that they're going to be, you know, they're going to miss certain aspects of him, but they're going to be a little more dynamic offense, like spreading it around.
I think that your floor is only so low when you have Patrick Mahomes at quarterback. They're not.
I agree.
He's going to carry everybody on his shoulders. But, you know, I just remember that the Bills game, obviously, and of the many crazy plays at the end of that game, where Tyreek just takes what looks like a normal, you know, intermediate pass, and he just takes it. He just outruns everybody. Like, nobody else could do that. Marquez Valdes-Scantling can't do that. Like, Juju Smith-Schuster definitely cannot do that. So you lose that that just incredible explosive play ability. And I do worry about Kelce a little bit. Kelce looked fantastic by the end of last year. He's great. He's a Hall of Famer. But he's 33, and the history of 33-year-old tight ends is very bad. Like, I've mentioned this on other podcasts when me and Matt Harmon were chopping up. There's only been two 33-year-old tight ends in history to post a 1,000-yard season. It's just you're at the age where it could really, really fall off fast. And he's a guy who they need to have 150 targets to. He's going to be the focal point of their offense. They don't have much of a running game because they passed on Jonathan Taylor for Clyde Edwards-Helaire. I don't know that Isaiah Pacheco is immediately going to become a star. Jerick McKinnon's going to stay healthy or anything like that. So a lot of this offense is on Patrick Mahomes' shoulders, but it's Patrick Mahomes, you know? And I was kind of fading him early in the offseason, saying, okay, Tyreek's gone. They're good. And by the end of the offseason, I'm like, what am I doing? Andy Reid's one of the greatest coaches of this era. Patrick Mahomes is going to end up as one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time. Why would I be down on that? Like, can't I just bet on, he's going to turn Juju Smith-Schuster into a 1,300-yard receiver this year, and MBS is going to be a dude. And it's Patrick Mahomes, man. He's one of those few guys on the planet that's just going to make whoever he's with better, and they're going to be just fine.
Valdes-Scantling just played with Aaron Rodgers. I kind of feel like he is what he is, like, at this point. Like, if Rodgers can't
get
out of him.
Like, they like him, though. I mean, I know that's funny money, but 3 years, $30 million. Hey, they obviously see something that they can unlock there.
I will say this, though. Smith-Schuster, if he can stay healthy, okay? Like, he got the knee thing and missed some practice. But I think if he's healthy and he's on the field, the little bit of what I saw between he and Mahomes, I was kind of like, oh, you know what? Maybe. Like, maybe this guy actually. Like,
yeah, I know.
Because they had the pickups, and you're like, I couldn't get over the fact that you lost Tyreek Hill, and I'm just like, what? Where the hell are you going to get anything dynamic like this? So I feel like I was probably a little down on maybe some of the pickups at the wide receiver position. But then when I saw Smith-Schuster, there were some hallmarks there of, like, when we loved him, you know, when it was like, and I'm like, man, maybe he just needed a quarterback with a ton of confidence, a big arm. You know, let's be honest, you know, he did not live up to what he could have been in Pittsburgh. Now, that said, they were straddled at quarterback for a while. Like, Ben was not, it was jacked up there for a while. And you have to wonder, like, how much of that impacted a player who now steps in. He's going to realize whatever he's got, he's going to realize it here. Right. Mm-hmm. And so if he can be that bigger, more explosive guy, you know, not, hey, we threw him 100 balls and he averaged, you know, 8.9 yards per catch. You know, no, I think he could still be that big, explosive guy downfield. And they'll probably get on. You're right, though. How low, you know, is your ceiling when you're starting with Mahomes?
You're just never going to be a bad offense with that guy. He's so good. I will say this, too. We talk offense because it's Mahomes and they're so fun. The defense is getting interesting. I mean, they keep adding talent. This year, they went and drafted McDuffie. I thought it was a great value pick, a cornerback. They get Carl Aftis from Purdue, who's looked great in the preseason. He might end up being a real big-time player for them. Chris Jones is still a stud. They got some speed at linebacker. Tyrann Mathieu is a big loss for them, I think, especially leadership-wise, and what he does is kind of the quarterback of the defense. But Justin Reed's a very, very good player. So
I like Reed.
Yeah, I do too. And all of a sudden, you're like, all right, the Chiefs aren't going to be a top 10 defense, but maybe if the offense goes from being like top 3 to top 6, but the defense rises from 20th to 15th, you know what I mean? Like, it might balance it out a little bit where that defense is a little more feisty than they've been because they really have been investing and they do have some pieces now.
Okay, but here's my problem. And I like their safeties a lot. I like Reed and Thornhill a lot. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I don't know about the pass rush, man. Like, Carl Aftis is a guy that really could.
I get it's just preseason. He did it against a Bears offensive line and all that.
Frank, we just talked about the Broncos. At least we named like three guys. We're sure. Like, okay, this guy had a big preseason. that they just moved. This guy, they signed him to be a big answer in Randy Gregory. And then this other guy at one point in his career showed that he had, I don't know that the Chiefs even have, I mean, I guess Frank Clark can go, well, you know, Frank, what we saw down the stretch from Frank last year, you know, what we saw in the post, you know, like, is that, can Frank still be a dude? Like, that's, I think that's a legitimate question now. And I just,
and they need Chris Jones to stay healthy up front. I mean, if he's healthy, he's an awesome player. But yeah, they, you're right. It's thin up there. I'm just saying there's some, a little bit of hope there that maybe this defense is ready to become something other than just, hey, try to not give up too many points because we don't want to lose this game 42 to 38. Okay. We're going to put up points. We just need the defense to do its part. Well, maybe they can be a little more than that. They have added a lot, and I'm intrigued at least to watch their defense, see what they got.
Okay. I love it. I'll tell you what.
Who are you picking to win the division? Are we talking about this?
That's what I was just going to ask you. Cause I don't want to do this. I want to pick who's going to win the division. This is going to burn me and it's going to, unfortunately, it's going to infuriate listeners because it's just how it is. But I think the Chargers get their together this year.
I really do.
We're going to get burned on this.
Yep.
We're probably going to look like idiots. But I just think top to bottom, the one thing about the Chargers that I think you, beyond the quiet offseason that I liked in terms of them not being a focal point, they make a couple defensive additions. They sign guys. They got a quarterback who's blooming. Everything. The offensive line looks great. The running backs, there's a ton to like. But what I really, really like is I do think Staley, I think he screwed up at times last year. And I actually think he's got an opportunity to, and to me, he seems like an open-minded guy that he learns from.
That dude, yeah.
These are the mistakes I made. Like, clearly, I screwed up some situations. I went for it at times where, you know, I should have either kicked it or I was just being crazy. I was, you know, putting us at such a disadvantage at some time in some situations. I think he's got the ability to show that he's learned from that. Now, I could be wrong, but every other stop that he has been at, okay, every other team, you know, everywhere else that he's ever been, the coaches who coached alongside him said the same thing about the guy. He is really bright. He learns. He adjusts himself. And he doesn't have the ego to just tear it up and go, I f***ed up. I was wrong with that. You know, right. Now I got to change. I got to do something different. He doesn't have the ego to think I can still be the same guy I've always been. And it works out. So I'm going to take the Chargers. I would not be surprised, though, if, you know, the Chiefs win it or, you know, I think the Broncos are a team that absolutely has an opportunity to be awesome, but it's such a brutal, it's going to be a brutal division too.
So tough. Yeah, it's hard to see a number one seed coming out of here. I mean, really, like the Bill, look at some of the Bills competition. We talked about them winning 15 games. One of these AFC West teams could be that good talent wise, but they're not going to win 15 games, 14 games because just look at the schedule. Yeah. Like, look at the teams they play. So, okay, we both, I'll go with you, Chargers. I'm ready to be hurt again with the Los Angeles Chargers, ready for them to lose to Houston late in the year like they did last year and screw up a playoff berth. What's the order of finish and how many teams make the playoffs out of this? Because you could make an argument that all four teams make the playoffs. You really could. Like the Raiders, as much as we like, just kind of have to put the Raiders last place almost, being as they're a 10-win team that added Devontae Adams and Chandler Jones in the offseason. They're good too.
But you know what? Here's the thing. Mahomes and Reed, okay. I still think the Chiefs, and man, it's taken me a long time to get here. I was just down on them. Like when the whole Tyreek Hill thing happened.
Yeah, I didn't agree. I still think they should have just chased it.
I'm with you too. I don't. And then I saw, you know, the additions, like I said, when they, you know, to bring in Valdes-Scantling and Juju Smith-Schuster, I did not like those initially, but I think it was because I was so hung up on, you know, just what Hill getting bounced off the roster, what that ultimately does to the dynamic of how defenses face them. But that said, I still think Andy is a great coach. I don't like their pass rush. I don't. But that said, I do think they have a good coaching staff. I like the coordinators. I don't know. I think there's second. I think worse to me, the basement for them is second place. Now, if they finish further down than second place, I also think that has something to do with the fact that the two new first-year head coaches in Denver and in Las Vegas exceed themselves a little bit in year one. And, you know, like pull a Nick Sirianni, like, you know, like did anybody really think people were all down on Nick Sirianni. He goes through year one. You're like, oh, wow. No, actually, like, it turns out he's going to be a really good coach.
Pretty good coach, a sharp guy.
No, like Hackett McDaniel, I think people expect Josh McDaniels and Hackett to be, Nathaniel Hackett to be good coaches.
So you had the Chiefs in the playoffs. Yeah, the Broncos in the playoffs. Because I think we had the same order. Broncos third place, right? Yeah, the Broncos in the playoffs. Because the AFC is no joke, yeah. Man. I mean, you got Cleveland and Cincinnati and Tennessee, and even the Patriots are totally dead. Can a third place team in the AFC West make the playoffs? I'd say yes. I think the Broncos do, but it's going to be really, really tough.
Yeah, I don't know. There's no doubt that if a team's going to have, you know, three playoff caliber teams or maybe even four playoff caliber teams, there's no question to me that this is it. Look, I'll say this about the Raiders, too. I'm putting the Raiders fourth for a reason. I don't like their line at all. I really don't. I don't like that Darren Waller. When I went through there, I'm like thinking, oh, Waller's going to be, you know, awesome in this offense. Going to be so dynamic. And then look what's unfolded there. So, that really, really bothers me. And I still feel like they're figuring some things out there. Coaching wise and scheme wise. So I don't have a problem putting the Raiders, you know, fourth. It's just, and that's not even really a dig on them in this division.
No.
Let's move them over to the NFC. We can move over to the NFC. I would like them as a top two team in a number of divisions. So even with the offensive line problems. So yeah, I don't know. I just don't know if that third team can get enough wins to make it.
I can't even tell you how much of a disappointment. Like, if the Broncos bring in Russell Wilson and miss the playoffs, it would be, people here would be crushed. Like, it would just, they haven't made the playoffs in Super Bowl 50. Like, Peyton Manning's last game was their last playoff appearance. And yeah, but you could, yes, I totally agree with the logic. I think the Broncos make the playoffs, but I agree with the logic of, That division is going to beat itself up. And we haven't even accounted for what if Miami makes a leap? What if Jacksonville makes a leap? What if somebody we're not even talking, Pittsburgh is a lot better than we thought. The AFC is absolutely freaking loaded this year. And yeah, it's sometimes hard to get the Broncos to the playoffs.
All right, Frank. Well, we'll see how those predictions play out. I'm glad we finally got a chance, though, to talk about the AFC West. It's going to be a lot of fun to watch them down the stretch and see how it sorts out. And we're getting close. I can start to feel it now. We're not that far away to finally getting this thing going. Hopefully everybody can be as healthy as possible. And maybe some of these people that have not been in camp can, not even camp now, right? In the preseason can actually get themselves onto the field and practicing before we kick it off. So as always, follow Frank Schwab on Twitter at Yahoo Schwab. Remember, he's going to be in the co-pilot seat through the rest of the preseason with me right up until kickoff. And we are going to reprise the freestyle, as always, on Sunday nights. So be sure to tune in for that. Also, help us keep Therese Paylor's legacy alive. Hit up BreakingTee.com/Therese for your All Juice tee or hoodie. Remember, proceeds from that sale go to support the Therese Paylor Scholarship at Howard University. You can also support that directly or the scholarship in his name at Power Mizzou. If you check out our podcast description, it will tell you what you need to do to donate. We would appreciate it, as always. You can get me on Twitter at Charles Robinson. You can get Brett Rader, our ace producer, at Brett Rader. Please also check out the Mothership at Yahoo Sports and give us a 5-star review. Share the pod with a friend. I know Chiefs fans are probably mad that we picked the Chargers in the NFC West, and it just gives them the opportunity to pile on down the stretch, but sort out the pass rush. We will see you next week. Have we chosen a date yet? Or are we going to?
We're going to do Friday.
Oh, we're going to do Friday this week. Yeah, that's right. Okay. All right. Yeah. So see everybody Friday this week. Looking forward to it. Peace.